Hey. Hey, hey.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode number 3 of the Powerline Podcast. I am Zach, and I'm here with Christian.
Hey.
We're coming to you live, 11:10 Eastern Standard Time, October the 10th. If you're a Lightning fan, you know what that means.
What does that mean, Zach? You know what? I actually do know what it means. It was the first home regular season game of the Tampa Bay Lightning 23-24 season. We faced the Nashville Predators, and it was a better game than I expected.
Dude, it ripped. It was not only the first Lightning home game of the season, it was the first NHL game of the season. The boys were fortunate enough to get game number 1 of 3 in the ESPN triple header tonight. Got that crispy 5:30 p.m. on a Tuesday puck drop time. And man, it was a memorable night for sure. Before we kind of dig into all of the nitty gritty of the game, some of the stats, some of our breakdown and takes, I really want to give a special shout out to the Tampa Bay Lightning for actually having us out tonight at the game, not just to attend, but also to take part in some of the game on, game one festivities. If you are in Tampa, or if you maybe were following a little bit on social media, it was really awesome this year. The Bolts are, from what I understand, kind of starting a new tradition of really having this incredible atmosphere for the game one, first game of the season. They had the blue carpet back, which is something they haven't done in years, where you get to kind of meet and have these close interactions with the players as they enter in the arena. They closed off Water Street and a couple of the blocks around it, had some awesome vendors and live performances all day. The Lightning Hockey Development and Community Outreach team was there, had some ball hockey. Dude, speaking of ball hockey, today was I'm just sidebarring this real quick. We're going to get back to game on, game one. But Christian had a big moment in his hockey.
Huge moment.
Your hockey arc today. You want to tell the audience?
For the first time, I held a hockey stick and shot a hockey ball. That was pretty fun. I kind of realized like some parts of it are a lot harder than I thought. I actually had trouble getting the ball into the air. And then when I did, kind of sailed over some tents and over some people, but a little bit out of the ball hockey area. It was my first time playing ball hockey, but Zach's actually been on the ice a couple of times. Zach, didn't you grow up playing hockey as a kid?
If you're a Fort Myers Floridian, there's different options on how you spend your free time. And growing up, I actually got super into the Florida Everblades, who are the ECHL affiliate of the Florida Panthers. It's actually where the Lightning had prospect camp this year, though, down in Fort Myers. But I grew up playing probably from the age of like 7 or 8 to the time I was about like 14 or 15. So my love for the game came mainly from playing it, and then like later on getting into more of like the following the NHL, getting into the stats, becoming just like a total geek once I didn't have the hands anymore. So game on, game one, an awesome experience. So we got to pull up there early, got to take part in some of those awesome events, the blue carpet, the ball hockey, some of the other awesome vendors. There was Wendy's. They had a Frosty machine.
That was nice.
On Ford Thunder Alley. It was so hot at like 3 p.m. And we were walking around. We just checked out the TB Sports store. Great new stuff. They got the Peter Millar in for the season.
Golf guys, watch out.
Dude, the Q-Zips are off the charts this year. The Q-Zips are going crazy.
That's my new term for quarter zip, for sure.
Dude, it's a thing. That's not a weird thing. Like, that's actually a thing. I promise.
I believe you.
But we were walking around. It was so hot. And they just had the daggum Wendy's on the side of Fort Thunder Alley. We grabbed a Frosty. We watched the legendary Big Boy perform live. 45-minute set. Honestly, I was really impressed. Like, he's got way more bangers than I remember. And he played a bunch of Outkast songs, which, like, if you don't know Big Boy, Big Boy's the other half of Outkast that's not Andre. And I forgot that he's really good, to be frank. We get too much love to Andre.
It's really hard, too, to keep a crowd engaged at like 3:30 on a Tuesday when it's hot. And he did well. And I think a lot of people really enjoyed it. I saw a lot of people actually like wearing Outkast merch. And so I was like, okay, clearly some people are here because they're really excited to see this guy. And I think it was a pretty good choice from the Lightning as a concert to have for free before the game.
For free. I loved it because it was like you had the mix, the Outkast people. And then there was dudes who you could tell clearly like work in the corporate offices like off of Water Street and came down like on their lunch breaks late in like full dress clothes.
Yeah.
And were just like, you guys ever seen the videos like the dancing newscaster guys who kind of have like some of that footwork? Like there was this dude to the right of us, just had some footwork and was just like spitting like all the Outkast lyrics. Yeah, he was recording a bunch of it. It was a really like unique atmosphere. And last year, I know the Lightning did like a lesser game one activation. They had Young Gravy come out, which was cool. If you're a Lightning fan, you know the lore. You're like, oh, Gravy Train, Gravy Wishing It. Like if you, yeah, if you're a Lightning fan, you get it. But the rest of a Young Gravy set is kind of like, dude, what? But the energy was awesome for Big Boy. And we actually had a really cool experience because of that experience from the Lightning and their marketing team. Special shout out to Shane and Gina. But we actually got to meet the boy himself.
We got to meet Big Boy. It's kind of interesting because like, have you ever done like a meet and greet? I've honestly never done a meet and greet for any artist before. And I love music. Like I have some really favorite artists I'd love to do.
Christian Katsia, big music guy.
You've heard it here first.
Huge on music.
Big. When someone says, I love music, usually they're like, oh, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's like, I love all kinds of music. It's like, oh no. Like this person has no understanding. But I really do. Like I can list tons of artists right now I love. I love I'm defending myself to
if
no
you
one.
If you see Christian around, dude, ask him three artists.
Yeah, name three artists that you like.
It was a sick experience. I will treasure the picture forever. We're going to post it on Instagram.
We love the photo.
We're going to post it on Instagram probably as like the cover for this episode. It's a real memory for us.
The Big Boy meme.
I asked him, he had two rings on a necklace. He had a Atlanta Braves championship ring and he had an Oregon Ducks national championship ring because his son played there. So
wow, a real sports guy.
I know, big sports, big on sports. Christian, big on music. Big Boy, big on sports.
Big Boy, big sports.
We're gonna ask him. He's hopefully a future guest for the pod. But it was an awesome experience. Thank you again to Shane and Gina for hooking that up. But we got to really enjoy the game tonight. See the whole experience. I always love going to one of the early games of the season just to check out how much has changed with like the graphics and the in-game presentation and the music. And I think that honestly tonight was a killer experience from every single facet. The whole shebang, the Amelie team crushed it, the Vinnick team crushed it. And our boys put on a show tonight.
Tonight was a really good game. So the game score ended at 5-3. And honestly, I honestly kind of expected it to be more of a domination by the Lightning. This is Nashville Predator slander count number 2 for the pod. I really didn't expect them to bring the kind of offensive game that they ended up bringing.
I'm a bit surprised to hear you say that, especially the Predators being maybe outmatched offensively. Although they kind of have shed some weight recently, dropping Janot, trading off Duchesne, some of that. I love the offseason move they made with Ryan O'Reilly. We saw how he performed for the Leafs against us in that series. I think people are sleeping on him. If there was, I've heard guys like Elliot Friedman and Frank Saravalli talk a ton about how they want there to be like an NHL Comeback Player of the Year award. Like I think the NFL has it. But I think that'd be such an awesome thing first and foremost. But I think that Ryan O'Reilly right now is playing with such a fire, especially that he's kind of gotten the pressure off of him from playing on the Blues and carrying that captaincy.
Yeah.
So that he can now go in and be a mentor and just really lead and set the example for a younger team, like a Nashville or like he did in Toronto. I think that he brought so is going to bring so much to their offense, and with guys like Tyson Berry too getting in the mix, Philippe Forsberg, I will make the Nashville slight praise count one, because I had looking at their team tonight and reading the roster, I was like, okay, this is actually like not just a list of names. Like there's some dudes on this team.
Well, apparently you're listening to the Predator Line podcast.
What?
We are two country music loving boys in Nashville, Tennessee. I think you are right about Ryan O'Reilly. And we definitely saw that with a goal from him tonight. And the stats don't lie to me. I definitely counted them out, but they brought 31 shots on goal against our 34. So they really brought it to us offensively the same way we brought it to them. Period one, we kind of started strong with us, and it seemed like, oh, total Bolts domination, which is what I was thinking was going to happen. We put in 12 shots on goal while they only put in two. But then period two, it's like they had some sort of revolution in their locker room. And honestly, we spent the whole period defending. It was like totally flip-flop from the first period. I would say period three is where things kind of evened out, and we had similar shooting on both ends. And we even started it with a game-tying goal from Nashville, which was pretty tough to see. But then we pulled away, of course, in the end with two extra goals. A lot of the shots on goal as well came at the end of period three when Nashville pulled their goalie, UC Saros, and they spent some time on the 6v5 with their goalie pulled, which definitely can help bring your shots on goal up and kind of help create more offensive chances. But with offensive chances, we had 2 out of 5 power plays convert, while Nashville only converted 1 out of 4.
I like that ratio there. 40% versus 25%.
Yeah.
Bolts cook.
I think we did a great job with our power plays. I've seen us not take advantage of our power plays before. I've seen us be sloppy with the penalty kill at times. And I think tonight was, hey, we can do it. We can have a really good power play and a really good penalty kill. One more interesting stat about the entire team I saw was that in blocks, Tampa Bay had 17 blocks versus Nashville's 10 blocks. And blocks in hockey are counted as a player preventing a shot that would have been a shot on goal. And I thought that was kind of incredible for us. Like, we helped Jonas Johansson have to face 17 less shots because we saw our guys put their bodies in the line just to make sure a goalie wasn't facing this barrage of an extra 17 shots. And I think it really helped. A lot of those blocks probably came at the end in 6v5.
Yeah. And what I would also say about the block shots too, before we really hop on anything else, is there's two big thoughts with it. I think that you nailed it. Especially with a goalie like Johansson, who's coming in and not expecting the workload that he's going to have to face because of Vasilevskiy's injury. I think it is going to be imperative that we, in any way we can, insulate him and create the best situations possible. So to see the Bolts get back to a behavior that was a cornerstone of those championship teams, being so aggressive in the defensive zone and pursuing those block shots, I think that that really benefits Johansson. And it also just shows, I think, a different desperation on the team this year. Lenny have kind of garnered a reputation the past 2 years of being a playoff team. And there's a lot of times where you look at how we perform in regular season games and we try to really lock things down once we have a lead. And sometimes that's a really effective strategy, especially against teams that maybe lack offensive attack. But to see it tonight come out so early in game one, I think it really was a statement from Cooper and from the whole roster that they're bought into doing whatever it takes, and knowing that Johansson holding down the net for this first part of the year is going to be a more steep uphill climb than what we thought. I think that it really shows that the team knows what's at stake right now, and we're going to do what it takes. So I loved that, and I'm glad that you brought that up.
So in the infancy of our podcast, we're still trying to figure out how some things will go. I think we've nailed that Zach is going to open it for now. But beyond that, we're pretty like, we don't know how things are going to go. Honestly, if you guys have anything that you love or anything that you hate that we do, please tell us, share with us ideas on how we can talk about things, what we can talk about. It's all really helpful. But one segment that we do want to try and bring as kind of maybe just something we see occasionally or we see for a time period in our season or just from one game, we want to introduce a segment called The Shooting Star and the Black Hole.
Interstellar vibes right there, baby.
Big interstellar vibes. Basically, this is a player that we think did really well and shot above their expectations, whether it's for one game or a time period. And then a player that kind of just disappeared into a black hole and wasn't what we needed them and expected them to be. In this game tonight, I would say our shooting star was Nick Paul. Nick Paul tonight, me and Zach were in the 300s chanting, Nick Paul hat trick. And we were ready. We were like so excited for him to get his third goal because tonight he got two goals, one assist, combining for 3 points in 16 minutes with a plus one box score. Guys, we talk about point production a lot on this podcast. One stat I'd love to kind of talk about here is points per 60. This is basically a stat in which a player will play for only a couple of minutes every game and you figure out how many points they got in that game over the total amount of time they were on the ice. And you think, okay, now let's extrapolate that. Let's expand that into what if they played for 60 minutes straight, which no one ever does, but 60 minutes is like the entire game. How many points, if the player kept producing points at that rate, if they went for the whole 60 minutes of a single NHL game, how many points would they produce? This is called points per 60. Nick Paul, at the current rate he was going, would produce 11.25 points per 60 minutes.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal. That's a massive deal.
Huge deal. Howie Mandel. I'm taking that briefcase.
We're taking the Nick Paul briefcase. Last year, and this is not a perfect comparison because it's over the course of an entire year, but this is just for reference. Nick Paul's points per 60 was 1.5. We can expect players to really hover around those lower digit numbers, 2, 3, if they're really good. 11.25 Nick Paul is cooking at. We won't see him keep this the entire year, obviously, but just to show how important he was to this game, how many counting stats he provided and helped the Lightning to their victory tonight, it's 11.25 points per 60. Pretty crazy. That's why he's our shooting star tonight. And our black hole, our player that just didn't show up, was Victor Hedman, number 77.
Womp womp.
Our Conn Smythe 2020 defenseman, probably our best defenseman over the last couple of years. We're a little worried, to say the least. Tonight, he put up, and then, you know, he's a defenseman, so you got to take these with a little bit of salt. Not a grain, but just maybe a couple grains. 0 goals, 1 assist, 1 point, with a negative one box score, which basically means that he was on the ice for one goal against more than he was on the ice for goals for. Basically, counting stats are hard with defensemen because a lot of defensemen can have incredible impacts on the game without providing the same kind of goals and assists that forwards create. But there's also definitely an eye test with Hedman. And in the 27 minutes that he was on the ice, Zach and I agreed, we didn't see the same Hedman that we've seen over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Christian nailed it. With defensemen, it's harder to give you some raw numbers about how they're performing. We saw last season that Victor's game regressed. Specifically in counting stats, he dropped about 35 or so points total. His goal total got cut in half. And he's still playing these really high minutes per game as he's aging, which, in my opinion, it's a tough load for him to carry with all of the long runs that the Bolts have gone over the past couple of years. And
by the way, he's 32 right now, which is not an ancient man of wisdom and knowledge, but a little older.
A little older in NHL standards, especially with the games he's had under his belt. So what I saw tonight personally is just he's just a little bit slower than during those cup-winning years. And it's not an issue. The question that I have is, what is his utilization going to look like? What is his utilization going to look like this year? And when are we really going to see the handoff, the passing of the torch from him to Sergachev? Because at this point, I watch Sergachev's game. I feel like I have a lot more confidence in watching him maneuver around the ice, watching him get on plays quicker.
Last year, Sergachev was sloppy sometimes, though. So I would be very eyes on him to make sure that he's doing the step up that you're wanting from him in order to give him the like first line defensive, like basically like defensive captain, which doesn't exist, but like the best defenseman on the team.
Yeah.
If you want to give him that award, I'm not sure if he's ready.
Yeah. I mean, it just sucks because there's not great metrics to go off of. If I'm being honest, I think that last year was a big, I think that he's continued to make strides forward. There's definitely flaws in his game sometimes. I would say that at Victor's best and at Sergachev's best, respectively, Sergachev is going to be a higher risk defenseman. He's, they're both very offensive. Hedman has that booming slap shot. Sergachev also has a really good slap shot, but Sergachev, I think, is much more apt to go down low and get into the play than Hedman is, which high risk, high reward kind of behavior.
You're saying like, say the puck's like kind of in the backboards of the enemy area, like Sergachev is going to jump in there with the forwards more quickly than Hedman would?
Yeah. Like I've seen, and I feel like it's been a common thing that Sergachev is more willing to get up into a play and maybe leave a traditional defensive positioning on the ice.
I saw that tonight. I saw Hedman like stay back, which, you know, can be a great move, can be the right choice. Mm-hmm. But I would say like, this is probably my first time really seeing that. And this is just more me as a learning and growing hockey fan more than like them doing anything different. But I totally saw what you're talking about. Hedman staying more at the point, staying like if the puck leaves the offensive zone, he's preventing a breakaway. I saw Serg more often being like, oh, how can I keep
Serg
this
will get deep into the play. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because the tricky thing is you would assume that watching Hedman stay at the point, being a more conservative minded defenseman, he's going to have more defensive upside. There was a couple times tonight though where on like the power play, or maybe they had just a good offensive setup going for a bit. I feel like I saw him miss a couple passes. I feel like I saw him really have to fight in foot races to not get burnt. And
I think I saw one time where Hedman got burnt in a foot race, and I think it was Perbix that came and saved him.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a great, like we've talked about this a lot. Not stacking your defensemen up to be like best with best, but having a complimentary. And I think that Cooper and the team has done a great job stacking up Perbix, who has pretty good foot speed, to play with Hedman. But I'm just at the point where I'm seeing Sergachev's game round out. I like that he's willing to get a little more down and dirty. I think that his finishing has gotten better in the past 2 years or so. And I'm less worried about his foot speed causing a high danger chance against than Hedman. So I'm just curious when that's going to happen and if he's going to start to take that role. We saw him and Hedman start to interchange a bit on power play one last year. And I'm just curious because we even talked about this as well a little bit, and we can delve into it more in a future episode. But you look at the way that a lot of NHL teams structure their top lines, you're going to have a higher defensive liability typically because your best offensive players are not going to necessarily go as hard defensively, not going to play as sound of a defensive game. So having someone like Sergachev who has more foot speed, who can get back and maybe shut down a play with a little bit more consistency than Hedman, I think it mitigates some of the risk that the first line can provide when they're going a little more freewheeling. This is all just hypothetical talk, but...
Yeah, we have to see, I think, what Hedman's counting stats are like, because his counting stats can offset maybe some defensive mistakes he makes. So just for reference for everyone listening, basically, Victor Hedman shot to 85 points last year, which, by the way, is pretty incredible for a defenseman. Erik Karlsson, probably, I think he reached like 100 points last year. And then San Jose traded him because they don't know what they're doing. But anyway, if you see a defenseman reach 100 points, it's like, holy crap, this guy's really cooking from the point, from the office. And the thing with Hedman is that he got to 85 points last year, but he averaged 54 points in the previous 8 years. So in statistics, you would call that an anomaly. Like, yeah, this guy did incredible, but we can't really expect him to keep that up year over year. He actually regressed last year to 49 points. And I wouldn't say that that's a terrible regression. I would say that that's okay. That's what we expect him to do. We don't expect him to be in 85 point range now because he did it once. Hedman's 32. He's not taking a step up. He's going to try to keep playing his best, really, for the next couple of years. Zach, do you feel like this year you want to see a changing of the guard from Hedman to Sergachev and Hedman demoted to second line defenseman?
Short answer is yes.
Wow.
The thing hot take. That I, and here's just an opinion. I would say that at the point Hedman's at his career, like, it's just tough because you look at it on paper and you call it a demotion, but like, in any other, like, this is a team game. And if you want to win, you have to optimize. You have to put players who are going to be maybe more suited for certain roles in certain places. And I think that maybe a great example would be, like what you said, Erik Karlsson joining the Penguins and playing with Chris Letang. Chris Letang is an awesome puck-moving defenseman. He has been the quarterback on that power play with Crosby and Malkin for years. They've had a ton of success. You bring in someone like Karlsson, Chris Letang's amazing. He's had that mantle for 15 plus years. You look at what Karlsson's ceiling is there on that power play with Sid and Malkin. You look at how dynamic of a player he is. Just because Letang's held that spot for the past 15 years, like, you got to recognize at some point someone may come along that is more suited for a role than you. And it's not any knock necessarily in Hedman's game. It's just that Sergachev at this point in time might be a better fit for that role. And I think that Letang and in the situation with the Penguins is such a great example of team hockey. And what I love about hockey compared to so many other sports is I think on a good team, the way it should work is that you're not demoting players, but there should be kind of a mutual consent of this is what's best for the team. If you want to be a team player and you want to win, a lot of times you do have to realize that your best interest might be taking a step down. And at this point, I think Hedman would be well fit to play a little bit less every game, to maybe be on a different pairing with a more defensively sound line, like that second unit we're running right now with Sorelli and Hagel. And that's no knock on his ability. That's no saying that Sergachev is now better than him. Like, you, how can you compare those two careers? They're both Stanley Cup winners. They're both played a huge but different role on those teams that were legendary in Lightning history. And I would not call it a demotion. I would just say it's an adaptation as time goes on. So I do think, in my world, this is the year that Sergachev starts to take some of that line one deep pairing minutes.
One thing I want to just wrap up the segment with is that I love looking at contracts because this is the side of hockey that really matters with our hard cap is what are you getting for the money you're putting into your players? I'm not saying we need to ship off Hedman right now because he had one bad game, but
most definitely not. Please don't interpret it that way.
We're not ready for that.
Yeah, no.
My heart. But I do think that we do need to take a look at the stats and say, okay, Serg is making $8.5 million, which I still think is a great deal for him. Hedman is currently making 7.8 and he's got 2 years left in his deal. So this is kind of one of those moments where this is going to be harsh to hear. Depending on how we do this year, depending on what next year looks like, could we ship off Hedman by the trade deadline next year, receive some draft picks, receive some things that we need to get our team back into contention in a few years? This is something I said in our first episode of the podcast. I see the horizon when we need to sell our highest paid aging stars, and Hedman might be the first one, depending on how the next 2 years go.
Man, I don't know if Bolts Nation is ready for your takes.
I'm sorry, Bolts Nation.
This is what I appreciate about you is you are the winning guy. And I'm the more sentimental one. That hurts me to hear. But it there's some very good points.
And I don't want to be
there's
right.
Some very good points.
Like, I want to win a Stanley Cup this year. I think we could. I want to see Hedman stay really good for many more years of his life. I don't really want these things to happen as a fan, but I do think that as a critical thinker, I always want to think about like kind of what's best for the future of the team. And if I want to see another Stanley Cup in the next 10 years, do I want to see our team have like a mediocre attempt at one right now? Which I'm not saying like this is the mediocre attempt, but if it is this way, are we doing a mediocre attempt at a Stanley Cup right now? Or could we have a really good attempt at a Stanley Cup in 7 or 8 years? Which I think some teams have shown that they have taken that seriously. Buffalo Sabres really sucked for a long time. Now they're one of the most exciting teams in the NHL. The same with the Senators. The New Jersey Devils are probably the clearest example.
The New Jersey Devils are the best example.
That's the best example. They sucked. They committed to the suck. They have great draft picks. And they knew what time to come back. And, you know, we'll see how the season goes. But keep this in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Chris hates the Lightning and wants us to suck. Clearly, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's all for this segment. Give it up for GM Chris, everybody.
We have some rapid fire takes here just to kind of finish out this look at the game right now and what the game we saw tonight and what we're seeing for the Lightning.
So the first
one I want to talk about is Valtteri Merella. Probably saying his name wrong. We'll figure out how to say it eventually.
I think it's Merella.
Merella. Valtteri Merella. I'm glad we drafted him. Glad we developed him because he's really good at back checking. And I think that's the kind of forwards we need for a third and fourth line where we may have our weakest defensemen.
Yes, he had some dog in him tonight. If I gave out my weekly Drake for the Dogs Award, it would be Valtteri tonight. There was one play in particular I loved. There's two. One, he had a great takeaway. I think it was in the first, second period. Didn't turn into anything, but just a good, clean, like stick lift takeaway, if I remember correctly. Second, there was a point, I think, in the third period where he kind of got decked on a takeout or on a breakout and was trying to go into the offensive
zone. Takeout?
He was trying to pick up food. He was hungry.
He was at Chili's.
And he ordered it online before he showed up to the restaurant. He was trying to break into the zone, basically lost the puck, and the puck came back to him and he tried to beat it into the...
I saw that, yeah.
I think he got decked.
He got and decked. He I know exactly pissed. What you're talking about.
Yes.
Morella got decked, was pissed. The puck came back around near him and he was just like, I got to get this puck control.
He was flying.
And went offsides, which is like, okay, silly mistake. But that's the kind of like drive he has. That's the dog award.
Yeah, he truly got decked. And to just see how ready he was to make an impact, especially on that same shift, really made me happy. Whoa, 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 whoa for Morella tonight. I love that. Rapid fire take number two. Hagel and Cirelli PK unit.
I can't believe you just barked into the podcast.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Rapid fire take number two. Hagel and Cirelli PK unit is looking lethal. A lot of E's in that lethal. I have loved watching Cirelli really just come into his own as this all-around dynamic player, becoming a bit more offensive in the past couple years. but also really just being a perennial defensive threat. And getting Hagel on the team, watching his effort, watching the way that he hits, the way he's willing to get dirty and scrap and stand up for his teammates, but also the way that he effectively uses his speed and his size to take the advantage and make takeaways. He actually led the NHL in takeaways last year, little known fact. But seeing Cooper utilize them on PK Unit 1, first off in our zone, I think that it is just such a nuzzle on the opposing team when they're out there. And then just the threat of either of them breaking loose and getting breakaways. These are two guys that can finish. And if you put them, even if they end up in a 2-on-1, which is an ideal situation, it seems like they already have such great chemistry together. I am over the moon about this pairing, and just inject that Hagel extension into my veins, dude. I am so happy to see him crushing it. And tonight he gets that penalty shot goal. My God. Again, such a great tenured goalie like Saros. Incredible. Just so, so good. I am so happy to see him coming into a huge role with us. And they freaking rock. They just rock. Another twosome that I'm a big fan of right now, the Nick Paul and Mikey Asamont duo. Just two total losers to play against. Like, I would hate to be matched up on a line against them.
They're definitely the Dog Award finalists.
Yes, perennial, like, dog-recognized players. I think they both have such a strong stick-to-itiveness on plays. They don't quit easily.
Yeah.
They're both so great on the wall. I love tonight. There was quite a couple series where you would see that line with the two of them and Sherry, I believe, kind of get into board battles and just really kind of dirty hockey. And they were just giving the Predators hell, coming out with a lot of great situations. And even Sherry, like Sherry had a couple of great takeaways throughout the game. I'm big on that line. I'm big on Paul and Asamont. And I'm also just going to take a quick little tangent because I didn't get to talk about my thoughts on the shooting star, Nick Paul. I want to put it out there. I know, me, myself included, that we are heartbroken about the Killorn trade to Anaheim. But I tell you what, man, I am so excited to see Nick Paul play bumper on PP1. This dude is so big and imposing. And it's funny because I've watched him and I've noticed before that when he's skating with the puck, he can have a little bit of a hard time controlling it and keeping possession. But when he's just in a space and kind of in a still spot, he's got such good hands to stick handle in tight and a good release from up close. I love that they have utilized him on PP1 playing that center role. And it paid off tonight. He got two gritty goals in front of the net on the power play. And man, just to see that that is a contract that we locked up for another 6 years at $3 million, the value that I think he's going to be able to bring us, exclude everything else that I think he's a great leader and he's already becoming an excellent face for the team in a lot of ways. He is going to be a threat to penalty kills all over the league. And I've been a big Nick Paul guy. I got a Nick Paul jersey before the extension.
Wow.
I love.
A believer.
I'm a Paul head, dude. And watching him tonight, especially after, I think a lot of people would say last year, he regressed a bit from the initial performance in his first year after the trade deadline. Seeing how he was tonight in those new roles, I am so excited. I am big, big on that.
We're going to wrap up this podcast with just some things that are happening around our podcast and get to share a little bit. We actually finally have had some interaction with fans. We thought through some of the ways we're doing things. So the first one is that we actually got some feedback on one of our nicknames. Zach actually brought in the nickname Tom Kachuk for Matt Tompkins, our backup goalie right now. And we actually got a little bit of feedback that that wasn't the best name for him.
Shout out my friends Jesse and Aaron from Instagram, because I thought that this was a very creative little bit of feedback.
They want to name Tom Kachuk, Matt Tompkins, to actually be Tom Cat as a reference to Vasilevsky being Big Cat.
Now we got Tom Cat. And what I like about it, kind of reminds me of Tom and Jerry. Because there's a cat in that right? show, but I don't know which one's Tom or which one's Jerry.
You don't know?
I can't remember as we're recording this.
I'm pleased to announce to you that Tom is the cat.
Tom is the cat?
Yes.
Yo, Jesse, if that's what you meant in the DM, that Tom is the cat from Tom and Jerry, you have really cooked something up that it took me way too long to realize.
I don't even think she was thinking that far.
Dude,
this if you is were, just, I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess you were.
We're in the Powerline extended universe right now. It's getting so big. And to add some Tom and Jerry lore into this is incredible. So thank you, Jesse and Aaron, for sending that DM, that suggestion. If anyone else listening to this has some thoughts, some things come to their mind while they listen to us, please hit our line. We're happy to read your DMs. And
we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
One thing I'm really worried about, we've been calling Jonas Johansson JoJo, which has been really cool, and it's caught on a little bit. I'm really worried his name is actually Jonas Johansson, and therefore his nickname should actually be Yo-Yo.
He's up and down, baby. That's the Yo-Yo.
No, I hope he's not.
He was up and down in the past life, but now he's more true. Like it's he used to be Yo-Yo, as in like up and down Yo-Yo. Now he's like Yo-Yo Ma. Like the brilliant classical performer.
Gosh.
He's found a new composure to his game, and he is going to be a master in the net for us. So shout out Tom Cat and Yo-Yo.
You came up with that nicknames. Off the dome. That was special.
I'm spitting right now, 12:06 a.m.
I hope that Yo-Yo sticks. And we got to find out what his name is.
Yeah, Yo-Yo and Tom
Cat. It
could
be Eunice. I think I've seen where he actually has two O's in his first
Eunice?
Name.
Eunice? Dang, that's crazy.
I don't know.
Dude, European names go wild.
I'm sorry to our starting goaltender. The last thing we want to talk about is I think a lot of podcasts tend to have a pretty regular schedule with what they're doing. They'll say like, hey, we have a pod coming out every Tuesday and Friday or something like that, which is great. For us, dude, to be honest, we are not sure. We have talked about different ideas. We also both work full-time jobs. We have to kind of find time throughout the week to work on this stuff, which we love doing. We're so excited we get to do this for you. But we do have to sometimes find different days of the week, and we have to figure out, are we recording it before or after a game? Because, you know, if I say, oh man, you know, Zach loves Nick Paul, right? Now, what if Nick Paul's a terrible game and you know that, but we don't know that when we're speaking to you in your car on the way to work? That's the issue. So we're trying to figure out some of that stuff. For right now, we want to produce this podcast and release it weekly so that it's at least a semi-accurate, semi-consistent thing in your life. But we don't know what day yet. That's okay.
Yes. So stay tuned. Watch out. I mean, I think it's kind of a little bit of fun. It's like, I don't know. It's kind of like once a week you get to spin the Wheel of Fortune wheel on Spotify and be like, oh my gosh, I've won a new Powerline podcast with Zach and Christian. So keep your eye out. Like Chris said, and like we're talking about with some of you guys interacting with us on social, please send us your thoughts, things you like about the show or don't like about the show. If you guys have a day that you really like, maybe we'll listen to you and do it on that day. Maybe not. But we do love feedback and we do appreciate feedback. And like Chris said, we will definitely find a way to make this happen on, at this point, a weekly basis. Just keeping you on your toes in terms of when during the week that's going to be. But we are very happy to be making Lightning content for you guys. And yeah, we're having fun.
One thing that is pretty consistent, thanks to Zach, is our social media. Like, I would say this guy is posting at least every other day about something that's happening in our team. So shout out to you, Zach. And that's always a place to engage with us.
Yes, powerline.podcast on the Instagram, Powerline, a Tampa Bay Lightning hockey show on the Facebook. And then we have an X account, actually. I think it's just Powerline Hockey. We keep you on your toes on the show. Different names for every network. I don't post a ton on Twitter. I just kind of get news from there. So don't feel pressured to follow the Twitter page, but Instagram and Facebook, we're always interacting and love to spread the news that way. So give us a look-see on those, if you please.
Dude, I'm going to try the outro this time.
Hit it.
Thanks for listening to the Powerline Podcast, and we'll see you next time.